Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. Welcome to the press conference of the 176th meeting of the Military Committee, the Chiefs of Defence Format. With the Chairman of the NATO Military Committee, General Peter Pavel, with Supreme Allied Commander Europe, General Curtis Scaparotti, and the Supreme Allied Commander Transformation, General Denis Mercier. We will start this press conference with statements by the Chairman, followed by the two strategic commanders, and I will open the questions to the floor afterwards. General Pavel, the word is yours.
Thank you. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Let me begin this press conference by giving you an overview on the main outcomes of the first Chiefs of Defence meeting in 2017. Our meetings have been very productive and allowed for frank and lively debates. The Chiefs of Defence were able to evaluate and shape future work, as well as provide additional guidance on key areas which will be subsequently discussed by ministers next month during their defense ministerial. In our morning session, the Chiefs of Defense discussed their military advice on the NATO command structure functional assessment, the progress on both the defense and deterrence, and projecting stability work strengths, as well as NATO's posture and continued adaptation. NATO's purpose and role to safeguard the freedom and security of its members through political and military means is as relevant today with the new and unconventional challenges facing the alliance as it was at its inception. NATO is at the forefront of the fight against international terrorism. Countering terrorism is a complex challenge that cannot have just a military response. We have continued this support to Afghanistan with our Resolute Support Mission to train, advise, and assist the Afghan forces and institutions. In our meeting in a Resolute Support format, the Chiefs of Defense were briefed on the ongoing security challenges in both Afghanistan and the surrounding region. Noting that the situation in Afghanistan remains difficult and that the Afghan security forces have taken many casualties, the CHOTS took the opportunity to recognize their efforts as they continue to defend the Afghan people with determination, courage, and combat enemy across the country. The CHOTS also stressed the importance of working with Afghanistan to encourage all regional actors to play a constructive role to find a lasting solution. This is the best way to support efforts to fight terrorism, stabilize Afghanistan, and to support the unity of it. Meeting with our Mediterranean dialogue partners and interoperability platform counterparts, the CHOTS emphasized how essential mutual understanding was in order to further our practical military cooperation, while also emphasizing the individual requirements of each nation. They highlighted the need to increase the effectiveness of our partnership programs via the individual tailored roadmaps and to augment interoperability. With regional challenges affecting global security more and more, holistic approaches that bring together military, political, and economic efforts will enable us to respond more effectively. Today's session began with Ukraine. The Chiefs of Defense briefed on the current state of affairs of the Ukraine armed forces, the progress in defense reforms, and the situation in and around Ukraine. The CHOTS commended defense reforms efforts while reaffirming their support for the sovereign and territorial integrity of Ukraine, and their refusal to recognize Russia's illegal and illegitimate annexation of Crimea. During the meeting on Georgia, the CHOTS received an update on the status of the substantial NATO-Georgia package, as well as a briefing on the security situation in and around Georgia. They noted ongoing challenging security situation and stressed their commitment to the close cooperation and support between NATO and Georgia. They also commended Georgia for their significant contribution to our Resolute Support Mission. In our last meeting today, the CHOTS held a candid discussion on Russia. The chiefs of defense highlighted Russia's increased assertiveness and encouraged me to continue to explore the options for a meaningful dialogue with General Gerasimov in order to increase our risk reduction and transparency efforts. With that said, I will now hand the floor to Sakhir, General Scaparotti, and subsequently to SecT, General Mercier. Mike, over to you.
Well, good afternoon, and first let me thank Chairman Pavel and General Mercier for their leadership and the commitment to strengthening NATO. I really couldn't ask for better partners. In this Chiefs of Staff session over the past 2 days, we've highlighted one major theme, the importance of unity across our alliance. I often say that unity is our alliance's center of gravity, and during this session, we discussed several ways that we're working together with unity of purpose. First is Enhanced Forward Presence, or EFP. The Warsaw Summit last year was an important expression of NATO's unity, and our senior leaders agreed the EFP is a specific and necessary component of NATO's deterrence and defense posture. At Allied Command Operations, I'm encouraged by the continued steady progress we are making to implement EFP along NATO's borders. This demonstrates the alliance's ability to act with a unity of effort to respond to the changing security environment. Second, during this session, we also discussed projecting stability outside of Europe. Contributing to security beyond NATO's borders strengthens both the alliance and the international community. NATO is united in our commitment to the global security environment and to the partners and institutions that protect democracy, human rights, and rule of law. One area where projecting stability is manifest is Afghanistan, a third focus area for this session. NATO will continue to train, advise, and assist Afghan security forces through our Resolute Support mission. The planning process to define NATO's presence in Afghanistan is ongoing, but we'll all agree that the mission of preventing terrorists from again using Afghanistan as a safe haven is critical. These are just a few of the focus areas from this conference, but I think they illustrate the main theme of alliance unity. And with that, I'll turn it over to General Mercier. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Peter and Mike. And you know that my role here is as a commander of the transformation of NATO is to look at how, in coordination with the military committee and especially the chairman and SACUR, how we can continue to improve today. But the role of my headquarters is as well to try to continuously anticipate and look at new ideas and try to shape tomorrow and then to define how we can bridge the two. And in this meeting, we dealt with many issues related to the improvement of the NATO's posture following the decision made at the Warsaw Summit and decisions that are related to defense and deterrence and that are related to Project Jungle Stability. And the question is for us and for my headquarters is we continue to improve this and how we can anticipate some breakthroughs and to try to put that on the table. And when we have the shot in the military committee format, the question is, to see if these ideas meet their expectation, and it's a good way to test these ideas and see if they support them, and if they do it, the next step will be how we implement those ideas all together and how we make them approved. And this is exactly what we did. And as the chairman highlighted, that we discussed partnership. We are improving what we do today through the implementation of two pilot projects through individually tailored roadmaps with specific partners. But the idea was, is it sufficient? How we can expand that in the future? So we discussed that with the shot. And then the key question will be, how we bridge the two? And this is my role here in NATO. And this is why it is very complementary to work all together.
Thank you, Generals. And let's move on to the Q&A session. Please state your name and media affiliation before asking the questions. Let's start over here. Yeah.
Thank you, Ana Pisonero from the Spanish news agency, Europa Press. I'd like to know if the CHOTS discussed the possibility of beefing up NATO's response in the fight of terrorism, and particularly the Islamic State. in the light of the possible assessment that you got from your Algerian and Israeli counterpart on the situation of the north of Africa and the Middle East, and also taking into account presumably one of the main key interests of the new administration of Donald Trump for the alliance, which is to step up the fight against terrorism. Thank you.
Okay, I think I will take the first part and will leave the second to my American colleague. In terms of NATO response to counterterrorism, I believe that NATO is already doing a lot to support counterterrorism efforts. First, being present and active in Afghanistan, then supporting a number of activities in the Mediterranean and the Middle East. And we have to understand that counterterrorism is not just a physical fight against terrorists. Counterterrorism has a number of levels and facets. And NATO is contributing to many of them and will contribute even more. We are working on bringing these efforts more closely together to give them more coherence and thus more effectiveness. NATO will continue supporting activities, especially in training, the preparation of specialists of the countries mostly affected by terrorism, and give them more local capabilities to be effective in this endeavor.
I would just add that coming out of Warsaw, you know, we had the directive of NATO strategic direction south, and also projecting stability in the form, for instance, of our effort, training effort that we began this month in Iraq, and all of those are indications of NATO's commitment to fight and counter terrorism. And so as we go into the future in SHAPE and ACO, we're studying now ways in which we reinforce that network that defeats, you know, the ISIL and terrorist network globally. And I'm confident that we are doing a lot today, and we'll do more in the future.
Julian Barnes, Wall Street Journal. I want to follow up on that question. Leaving for General Scaparotti, and then another question for General Pavel. For General Scaparotti, leaving aside building partnership capacity, is there a military counterterrorism role for NATO, or is that best left for coalitions like we see for the Islamic State fight? Should NATO solely, its counterterrorism efforts solely be focused on the kind of partnership capacity stuff that you outlined here? And for General Pavel, I wonder if you could briefly speak a little bit more about Ukraine. Is there any fear that the U.S. Approach to Ukraine will shift? And was there any discussion of what more the alliance could do for Ukraine in the months to come?
Julian, thank you. I don't think it is solely projecting stability. For instance, you know, I talked about the network that we formed globally. It's the coalition network to defeat the ISIL or the terrorist network. We in NATO have, you know, 28 nations with a process, a structure that enables us to collect and share information, to analyze information, and that is a powerful part of countering terrorism. We can reinforce that global network that's going on right now with the nodes that we have within NATO. Secondly, I just point out things like the AWACS operations that we've started now that support the coalition in Iraq, et cetera. So we do have capacity. Those are the things that we're looking at, and that's what I look for to the future of being able to leverage to help the coalition and other nations.
On Ukraine, there is no reason to believe that there would be any change of the main course towards Ukraine. We are working with our Ukrainian partners, especially on increasing their capability and capacity through the trust funds, through different training programs, through expert exchange, through liaison teams in place. There is a comprehensive assistance package developed for Ukraine, and that package provides a sufficient framework for the way ahead. Ukrainian armed forces are under the process of reorganization, modernization, and they are adjusting to new realities. So I think we will continue in this course in future as well.
Nordin Farid from Al Arabiya News Channel. I have a couple of questions. You are supposed to have a briefing yesterday from your Israeli and Algerian counterpart about the situation in North Africa and the Middle East. Can you tell us what is your view, your analyze of the situation in Libya, its impact on Tunisia, Algeria, and the Sahel? But also, what is your view on the situation in Syria after the Aleppo, let's say, defeat of the opposition and the Russian building up more generally? How do we see the Russian military building up in the Mediterranean? Is it going up, or maybe they are going to retreat a little bit? And if you have time, generally, I remember after the end of the Cold War, we read reports or that NATO was out of date. Events shows the opposite. Now, Mr. Trump said that NATO is somehow non-relevant organization for many reasons. I imagine you are not a politician, but it may say something. Also, you may say something about that. Thank you.
Okay, so let me start first with the question on security situation in the Mediterranean and Middle East, and especially from the perspective of Algeria and Israel. We received very detailed briefings on their national perspectives that, in fact, reflect our own understanding and level of knowledge. We shared understanding of the challenges in the region that countries are facing, and how complex the situation and also volatile is in the whole region. And we used the opportunity of talking to our partners to better understand all these complexities. And we try to identify the ways how we can assist primarily them in increasing their capability to come up with their own local solutions. Obviously, there is no universal solution to be imported into the region, and there is no military-only solution to the problem. So we tried to identify a comprehensive approach how to assist in fighting terrorism, extremism in the region, how to address numerous challenges of social and economic nature. And we all recognize that this will be a long-term agenda for us as well as for the countries in the region. And in terms of a second part of your question, I think I gave partially the answer in my first statement that I'm strongly convinced that NATO is as relevant today as it was before. It evolves as any other living organism, and it adapts to a new situation. We can obviously argue about the scope, the depth, or the pace of adaptation, but I think the relevance of NATO is not in question.
Terry Schultz with NPR and CBS News. A couple of questions along the lines of my colleagues. Specifically with regard to Russia, when President Putin says that President-elect Trump's priorities align perfectly with his own, does that give you any reason for concern? Are you worried that even words like this might embolden Russia, particularly in Ukraine? Are you simply worried about the effect of this kind of rhetoric? And a more specific military question, with the purge in Turkey and the fact that many of your trusted officers have been recalled, or at least have left their offices. What kind of effect has this had on your readiness and your ability to trust that your Turkish staff can step up and do all the things that the purged officers could do? Thanks.
Well, first, we military try to build our assessments on policies rather than individual or separate statements. So I will personally wait for an official new administration policy, and then we can see. The second part of the question, we have full confidence in our Turkish military colleagues. They are doing their job at the same quality as they did before, even though in slightly lower numbers at this point, but they take all the efforts to fill the gaps, and we can rely on Turkey as an ally as we did before.
Yeah, two comments I'd make on that. First, to the Russians, and much like Peter said, you know, we assess actions and set our posture appropriately. I think that's the first thing, and I think the second is that we've got to address it with strength as well as balance, our posture and the way that we respond to Russia and their malign actions, or perhaps their aggressive actions that they've had in the past, and we'll continue to do that. In terms of Turkey, they stated very clearly their commitment, and I've seen nothing but that as the SACEUR. We work closely with them, and you know, in terms of their personnel, in my headquarters today, we're nearly back to the point that we were post to the, prior to the coup attempt. So they're refilling, you know, these important positions in our headquarters, and I appreciate their effort in that regard.
Thanks, gentlemen. Robin Emmett, Reuters. Question for General Pavel and Zucker, and then another question for General Mercier. On the Baltic and Eastern Poland build-up in the spring, I wondered if you'd discussed at all any of the consequences that this might lead to vis-a-vis any Russian reaction. Do you fear some kind of escalation on their side? Is there anything you can say about your understanding of their thinking? And for General Mercier, in the past you've talked about the need for countering A2AD and the need for sophisticated air defences. Have you made any progress on that given the situation in the Baltics? What can we expect for this year in terms of ideas, policy, planning? Thank you.
I will start with what you call Baltic build-up. I think we have to go into the sequence. What is the action? What is the reaction? I think the question is not how Russians would react to our action, but to consider that the decision to deploy four battle groups to Poland and three Baltic countries was in itself a reaction to Russian behavior. It was not NATO who launched support to separatists in eastern Ukraine or annexed Crimea. And Eastern allies were justifiably concerned about Russian actions. So they called for more assurance that collective defense Article 5 will apply in crisis. And they called for more NATO presence on their soil. So that was the reaction. And also we have to consider that Russia announced longer before the announcement of four battle groups that they are going to form three new divisions in the area. So we really have to measure what is reaction to what. And I believe that the decision to build four battle groups is very much appropriate and well measured. Not to be provocative, not to be escalatory.
Yeah, if I could briefly on that, I'm pleased with the progress we're making for the forces that will be in the enhanced forward presence. That work with the individual nations and the framework nations, pulling them together, is going well. Again, it's centered, as Peter said, on deterrence and defense, a proportional response. It's not offensive in any way, that's the first thing I would point out. And secondly, just that, you know, we'll be vigilant for whatever response, you know, there may be as we go in, and we're planning that as a part of our capability as we enter. And we'll see you know, how it's taken. But again, it's a deterrent force, and I'm confident they'll be able to provide the capabilities that we need there.
Just regarding what your question. Your question is linked to what we do, in fact, and to the NATO defense planning process. The NATO defense planning process is the way we look at the capabilities we need in our alliance to deal with the problems today and in the future. This is a very robust process, probably the most robust process that exists today, because based on the level of ambitions laid out in the strategic concept, we define the military requirement. We do that, SACUR and me. SACUR is focusing on the military requirement, looking at the current operations, and I look at the military requirement, looking at the full level of ambition. And then we define shortfalls, looking at what exists in the nations. And we're in the process now to do joint consultation with the nations and ask the nations to mitigate the shortfalls and to have the acquisition of the missing capabilities. And there is a priority for the missing capabilities for the current operation, but to look at the missing capabilities for the future. The A2AD system, we can deal with that, but we can deal with that with what we have today, and there is a form of priority looking at the deployment that we have. And again, we look at the new and innovative idea to deal with this system better in the future. And this is the beauty of this process. And this is what we are conducted, and it's working quite well, and it's really working with a huge support from the nation. And this is really the second cycle we run like this, which is a four-year cycle, and this time we have a huge support from nations. And that's very important, because this is the key to be sure that our alliance will be able to face any kind of challenge in the future.
Vladimir Dobrovolsky from Russian news agency RIA Novosti. I've got a question to General Pavel, because you mentioned the meaningful dialogue with General Gerasimov. So do you have any concrete date? When will you contact him, and what will be the subject that you would like to discuss with him? And another question is, Russian side repeatedly told that NATO rejected its proposal to hold talks on of the military experts. Is it still NATO position not to hold the talks between the military experts to discuss risk reduction measures? Thank you.
I can tell you that to have a meaningful military dialogue is one of my major issues since I arrived to this headquarters. Since then, I contacted Russian counterparts here in Brussels at least five times. The last one was last week, where I offered again dialogue to start with General Gerasimov, at least at the initial stage through phone conversation, to set clearly the stage for such a dialogue, to set clear rules for it, and also to get a mutual agreement that risk reduction and transparency is the focal point of that initial conversation. I also stressed the view that is different from Russian military, that we cannot start expert-level discussion without first setting the scope for the agenda at the top military level. Because even if we theoretically think about sending experts to Moscow or elsewhere, what will be their mandate? What will be the agenda for their meetings? Will they start talking from a very broad point of view? So we first have to reestablish the contact. We have to reestablish some basic trust. We have to set the agenda, and then we can give our experts a clear task what they are to discuss. And that offer is at the table, and we now expect a reaction from Moscow.
Thank you, Philippe Renier, newspaper Le Soir. I'd like to ask a question again on Russia, but this time on Libya. How do you assess the last moves made by Russia when they met with General Haftar on their air carrier in the Libyan territorial waters? Is that a threat, a new threat in that region, in the Mediterranean? Thank you.
I think it is very natural that Russia is trying within or in line with their recent policies to have more influence in the regions of their interest. The contact with General Haftar may contribute if General Haftar is an official representative of Libya. But I believe that the international community recognizes as an official representative of Libya the government in Tripoli. And in that sense, the effort is not helping. We would obviously welcome participation of any actor who would contribute to the solution. But contacts with just one side are not helpful.
Thank you for your questions. It concludes the press conference for today. Thank you very much.